And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, helping to get you over the hump and towards the weekend. With plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Coming up, the ticking time bomb of Julio Jones is now ticking. The countdown has begun. The clock has started. When will Julio be moved out of Atlanta? And where to? And what will it take? Plus, the NBA playoffs are quickly just coming down to health. Is Clemson suddenly in more trouble for the upcoming football season? Major League Baseball. Would baseball exist if it was invented, created today? And a whole lot more to get to throughout the afternoon. We'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling, Trevor Lawrence with some comments on his new teammate, Tim Tebow, and his new head coach, Urban Meyer, and a whole lot more over the next couple of hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, or there you can leave a message for the show. Just simply find our show page. You can always find the latest versions of the show podcasted. And you can also take the show with you wherever you go by just streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the board. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Doing well, but it just does not seem like a Wednesday, does it?
No, it does not. I mistakenly earlier, I thought it was a Tuesday. And then I realized, oh, yeah. And you know what? Tomorrow, because we're not going to be on the air Friday because of the Gamecocks. So tomorrow, it's going to feel like a Friday, at least for us around here. Right now, you probably had Monday off too, so you're driving around today thinking, oh, yeah, it is Wednesday. Right? We're already halfway through the week. That's nice. And I think it was, it's Colorado that was pushing at one time to have four-day school weeks, I think it was. Right now, that would be nice. Three-day weekends all the time? Sign me up. And this week, like, I love what I do, but hey, three-day work week this week, I won't complain. I'll miss hanging out with you, but hey, work three days a week, that's not a bad way to make a living. Let me start with this. The clock has begun on Julio Jones. Today is June 2nd, therefore, it makes sense now for the Atlanta Falcons to move him. They had to wait until this point before the Atlanta Falcons could trade Julio Jones because of cap purposes. It helps with the salary cap for the team if they wait until now to trade Julio Jones. How quickly will this come about? Mike Greenberg was talking about this on his show yesterday, which you may have heard right here on ESPN Radio before our show, Greeny. And Mike Greenberg was talking about this yesterday about Julio Jones and how this could come about very quickly, maybe by the time we're done today, maybe over the next 24 hours, but certainly by the end of the week. Here was Greeny yesterday talking about Julio Jones, how big of an impact this trade could have and how quickly it could occur.
Julio Jones is going to get traded, probably tomorrow. It could be as soon as tonight. It won't be any later than this week. Let's make clear why that is. Today, as of 4 o'clock Eastern time, it becomes June 2nd, as far as the NFL is concerned. And at that point, the moves that teams make has an enormous impact on the salary cap. I won't explain to you exactly what all the mechanisms are, but one way or another, it means that's when Atlanta can trade Julio Jones for the maximum efficiency as far as their salary cap is concerned, and they have to. They start their training camp stuff. They have, like, these mandatory workouts next week. They haven't signed their rookies yet because they can't afford to. If they don't trade Julio Jones, they won't have Kyle Pitts on the field for their first workout next week because they don't have any money to sign him. So Julio Jones is getting traded. Where does he go? The teams that we're hearing include the Rams, the Patriots, the Ravens, the Seahawks, the 49ers, any of those teams becomes a significant contender with Julio. In fact, I would argue that if he winds up with the Rams, they might actually challenge Tampa as the favorite in the NFC. You know I love the Rams. I've already told you I love that defense. I'd like to see them make that playoff run last year with a healthy Aaron Donald. He was a shell of himself in that playoff game against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I'd like to see that game again, and I would certainly like to see it if Matthew Stafford is their quarterback. This is happening today, tomorrow, literally that soon. So an enormous little moment in the NFL. Everyone's paying attention to what's happening with Aaron in Green Bay, and for all the right reasons. But the truth is, before anything happens with that, this is going to happen. It is not overstating it to say the Super Bowl could be decided this week.
That was on Greeny yesterday here on ESPN Radio. And I think he is overstating it. I don't think Julio Jones going to a team necessarily decides the Super Bowl this year. It would be a great boost. He talked about the Rams. Right, the Rams had a top five defense a year ago. They upgrade the quarterback position. Then they throw in Julio. They would be very tough in the NFC. If he goes to the Rams, sure, maybe. We can then look at the Rams as a favorite out of the NFC. It could bolster their Super Bowl odds. But some of the other teams, if he goes to New England, do we think it makes that big of an impact that the Patriots suddenly become Super Bowl contenders? If he goes to the Titans, it'll bolster that offense alongside A.J. Brown. But will Julio Jones make all the difference for Tennessee that we suddenly think they could win a Super Bowl this year? What about the Ravens? We know Lamar Jackson could use more passing options. That's why they went out and signed two receivers this offseason and drafted one. But in that offense with Lamar Jackson adding Julio, would that be enough to propel the Ravens, you know, past that final hurdle to become a Super Bowl team? And the 49ers would be very interesting to reunite him with Kyle Shanahan, to put him in that offense, to give Jimmy Garoppolo or Trey Lance another target. But is Julio Jones still at the point in his career where wherever he goes, it is such a boost for that team that they suddenly become a Super Bowl contender? I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think it depends where he goes. If he goes to the Rams, and you're talking about that team from a year ago that was a playoff team with a top defense, and now they add Stafford and Julio Jones, they become a lot more interesting. But it depends on the team. Just by simply adding Julio Jones, it's not like, you know, if you would make like Kool-Aid or Crystal Light at home, you just have to add the powder and the water, right? Throw the powder in, just add water. I don't think Julio Jones is like that at this point in his career. That some team is sitting there thinking, man, if we just add Julio Jones, that's it. No one's beating us. He'll be a great addition for someone. I don't know if it will have that big of an impact on a team, depending on where he lands, that will turn them into a Super Bowl contender. Unless maybe it is somebody like the Rams, who Greeny specifically profiled. In regards to how quickly this could happen, that clip came from yesterday. So Greeny said yesterday or today, we may get some news, who knows, by the time we sign off today, or by the time you go to bed tonight if you're a Falcons fan. You may know where the Falcons stand here, moving on from Julio Jones. We already got some surprising breaking news this morning with the Boston Celtics in the NBA. Maybe we'll get more. We're on news alert here. Right, looking around, keeping an eye peeled, or an eye open, I should say, your ears peeled, to see, we're going to hear anything about Julio today, tomorrow, by the end of the week? Greeny brings up a good point about the Falcons needing to sign their rookie class and needing to do so that they could get Kyle Pitts on the field next week. And in order to do so, it's going to take moving on from Julio Jones. But I think this could drag out a little bit longer than Mike Greenberg believes. I don't think it's going to happen today. It obviously didn't happen yesterday. And I'm not even so sure it happens by the end of the week. Because at this point, we haven't had any reports about anything really coming together. Yeah, we've had the reports that, you know, the Patriots had a meeting about trying to acquire Julio. Yeah, the Seahawks had a meeting about potentially trying to acquire Julio. Other reports that San Francisco is interested. We have all the normal reports. This team's interested. This team's thought about it. Yeah, this team, they would love to have Julio. But we haven't had any official reports of a deal is close. These two teams are talking. Hey, here's what this team offered. Right? The 49ers are the front runner. We haven't even had anything like that. We haven't had a whole lot of reports. Doesn't mean it's not happening behind closed doors, but it still just feels like we're not on the doorstep of a Jones trade happening just yet. Now, reports are, or were at least, that the Falcons not only are looking for a first-round draft pick, I can understand that. They should be looking for a first-round draft pick. I don't think they get it. But you always set your bar high, and then, you know, and then you meet in the middle. You ask for a first-round pick, they offer a third round, you settle on a second-rounder, and that works out. And a second-rounder is still good enough for moving on from Julio Jones. I know the Falcons want a first-round pick. I don't think they're going to get it. But Diana Rossini of ESPN did report that a team has offered the Falcons a first-round draft pick. And I said on the show yesterday, we'll find out in the next 24 hours if that's a true story or not. Right? Someone's feeding her that information. I'm not telling you Diana's lying, but the source that gave her that info, we'll find out if it's accurate or not in the next few hours. In fact, I think we've already found out by now, because if that story was true, if that report was accurate, I think Julio Jones would already be traded. You don't turn that down. If a team is supposedly already offering the Falcons a first-round draft pick, then what are they waiting for? This morning, once we hit June 2nd, they should have picked up the phone and pulled off that trade. Called that team back and said, hey, you still offering that first-round pick? Okay, he's yours. Because I don't think anybody else will be offering that first-round pick for Julio Jones. You don't turn that down if a team is willing to give you that first-round pick. You can't get better than that. What more are you looking for? Are you looking for a better first-round pick? You have no idea how these teams are going to be this year. You're holding out hope that the Jets will come along and offer their first-round pick for Julio, hoping that you'll pick at the top of the draft next year. Right? That's the best you could do. And if a team is realistically offering that, you accept that offer today. But I don't think we get a Julio Jones trade today, and I think that means or shows that report was never accurate, as we believed around here. I don't think a team will offer a first-round draft pick. Meanwhile, Pro Football Talk has reported that the Falcons are still asking too much for Julio Jones. They're setting the bar too high. In fact, in their story, their expectations, the Falcons' expectations, were described as, quote, outlandish by another team or a source from another team, saying that the Falcons are still asking for too much. And Atlanta can hold out hope. They can sit around and hope that eventually some team is going to give in. All right, what's the rush? We can wait a little while. And sure, they can. They have at least a week if you want to get guys like Kyle Pitts on the field next week for your offseason workouts. They can try to play some sort of hardball. I don't think they'll get a first rounder. And eventually, after trying for the next couple of days, you settle on maybe a second rounder. That'd probably be best case scenario, right? Especially for someone who doesn't want to be there. Asking for a first round pick for a 32-year-old wide receiver coming off an injury is one thing. But then to factor in the fact that he does not want to be there, leaving the Falcons with very little leverage, I don't know if they can turn that into a first-round draft pick. But if I'm Atlanta, I don't have to rush to unload him today, and I don't think they will. The big issue, again, is the salary cap and the help that this would provide, and that's really the main reason why they have to move on from Julio Jones. And the Falcons could use that help, and they could use that help to sign their rookie draft class and use that money on their rookies like Kyle Pitts and get going next week with this offseason and move forward. Right, move past Julio at this point because he's not part of the future plans. Rip that Band-Aid off, get the money in-house, sign your rookie class, get on the field next week, and start preparing for 2021, which obviously won't include Julio Jones. It will come together much quicker than Aaron Rodgers. Of course, that thing's going to drag out until the season begins. The Falcons can't allow this to drag out too long because they need that money. But will it happen today? I don't think so. I don't think the Falcons move that quickly. I don't think they have the option to right now, or at least not an option they like, that they're willing to move on that quick today. I don't think there's a first-round offer out there, and if there was, we'd already have news right now that Julio Jones has been traded. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll get news in the next couple of hours of a Julio Jones trade, but I don't think it happens today. I don't think it happens the next couple of days. I'm not so sure it even happens by the end of this week. Mike Greenberg believed there was a good chance it could happen last night or today. I disagree. I don't think so. I don't think it comes together that quick, because the Falcons seem to have higher expectations for the trade market than the other teams realistically do. I don't think the Falcons will get exactly what they want from Julio, and it's going to take them settling in order to move him. And you don't settle right away. Right? They always that's like the old classic joke in all the shows, with the bad negotiators, and they quickly come down every time they make an offer. Right? Usually that's not how it works. Teams are a little more stubborn. Their heels are digged in. It takes a little while for them to come off that original stance. Eventually, they get to the point, okay, you know what? We're realizing we're not going to get a first-round pick. We'll trade him for a second-round pick to the Baltimore Ravens or the 49ers or whichever team it may be. Will Jones help decide the Super Bowl this week? It only depends on where he goes. And will he be traded this week? We'll find out. But I don't think it happens in the next few hours or the next 24 hours, the next couple of days. It is interesting. The Athletic had an article today about the Atlanta sports scene, how Freddie Freeman is a free agent. And as Freddie said this week, there have been zero negotiations about his contract. Julio Jones seems to be, obviously, on his way out of Atlanta. And even the Atlanta Hawks, which, you know, may be on the back burner, they may not be the most popular Atlanta professional team, but you also have John Collins of the Atlanta Hawks, who's a free agent, and looks like he won't be back next year. So it is interesting that some of the bigger stars in the town, right now you can make an argument Acuna's a bigger star than Freeman and he's going to be around for a while and this and that, but Freeman has been the face of that franchise for a number of years. John Collins is young, but he's part of that young nucleus with Trey Young, and he may be on his way out. And Julio Jones has been there for a decade. He's the best wide receiver the Falcons have ever had, and he's on his way out this week. I don't know if Freeman's going anywhere. John Collins probably is. We know Julio is. But it's somewhat like the end of an era, I guess, or just the changes that are coming to Atlanta. That if you're an Atlanta sports fan, you're losing Julio Jones. Maybe, worst case scenario, you lose Freddie Freeman after this year. If you root for the Hawks, you could be losing John Collins. Some changes coming potentially the next couple of months to the sports teams of Atlanta. Speaking of the NBA playoffs, when we come back, those playoffs may simply just come down to health at this point. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Mara Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Ben Lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, the NBA playoffs may simply just come down to health at this point. It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some golf a little bit later on with Jeremy Schilling as we do every Wednesday. And if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio of Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Or find the show on demand, podcast it online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You know, yesterday in the show, we had Meta World Peace. And fortunately, last night with the NBA games, we had no problems with fans at the NBA playoff games last night. Hopefully that continues tonight because we got all sorts of games in the playoffs going on tonight. And so I thought it was a perfect time to have Meta World Peace, the man formerly known as Ron Artest, on the show yesterday. Unfortunately, because of the schedules, we didn't have a ton of time with him. I would love more time with Meta. He is an interesting man. Now, many remember the ugly incident that happened in Detroit when he went into the stands and attacked a fan 17 years ago after the fan had thrown his Diet Coke at Ron Artest, now known as Meta World Peace and all sorts of other names. But he's always been open and has talked about it and has since, you know, gone to counseling or therapy and has gotten a handle on some of the things he was dealing with. You know, yesterday we were talking a lot about mental health. Ron Artest, now Meta World, I keep thinking of him as Ron Artest. That's what I grew up with. He's now an advocate and he has a company that tries to help people with their mental health. So I know a lot of people have a bad thought process, or they think poorly of Meta World Peace from that incident. And fairly so because of what happened. But since then, he's tried to turn it into a positive. He had sold his NBA championship ring to raise money for mental health awareness. So he is trying to do his part to help others maybe avoid that same mistake he made. But Meta World Peace joined us yesterday. And if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. But if you missed our conversation with Meta, we'll replay it now. A few minutes long that we spoke with the man formerly known as Ron Artest yesterday. And simply just started by asking him what he thought about everything going on with these NBA playoff games and the way that fans have been treating the players lately.
You know, I just think, like, after the pandemic, people are a little stressed. You know, I think the fans are, into the game. You know, and when you're a fan, you know, sometimes you say, I'm going to the game and we're going to have a great time and this guy sucks and, you know, we're the best. And sometimes, you know, there's no rule book to how to be a fan, right? So sometimes you get beside yourself. Now, if you're throwing water bottles, you should not be throwing a water bottle, you know, in an American sports arena. You know, so that's more, that's not justified. Spitting, that's not justified. Popcorn, you know what? Not justified, but not really worth a lifetime ban. But you know what? Don't throw popcorn on our athletes. It's just not. You can't do it. Running on a court, touching the backboard, we've seen that before, right? So I'm not going to get, too consumed with talking about someone running on the court and touching a backboard. I think that's funny, honestly. But what's not funny was the water bottle. That was really dangerous. and then the spitting, that's really disrespectful and also dangerous because of the pandemic.
Yeah, certainly. And you've been on the wrong side of that, where, of course, we all think back to what happened in Detroit, where somebody threw a drink at you when you were laying on the scores table. And that, at the time, I'm sure was a wake-up to fans, like, wait a minute, right? These aren't guys that we can just mess with. There are repercussions for our actions. What do you think could be done nowadays with these fans to try to keep this from happening? Because it seems like every night we're getting a new story of a fan throwing something at a different NBA player.
You know what? I think... obviously, I was a part of the brawl, and the fan that hit me with the cup. You know, we're friends now, but when I spoke to him about it, you know, he apologized. He was just saying he's a little drunk. And that's what happens sometimes at arenas. You know, we got people that's excited. We want the fans to stay excited about the game. You know, I mean, some of the language, yeah, we could do without. But you know what? That's been happening for years. You know, that's become a part of the sport. I mean, I don't want a boring arena. I want a hostile arena. Just don't want people hitting. I think any hitting, physical objects, that's not called for. Any bad language. Bad language is not like you effing suck. You know, bad language is like if you're saying, you know, something that could be racially, you know, negative. Mm-hmm. You know, that's bad language, right? So, you know, you want to think about that when you're going to an arena, because I don't think the athletes are coming to an arena to hear bad language. You know, obviously nobody's perfect. You're not going to get it's not going to be perfect, but I just think it's something to think about. You know, fans need to think about what's happening, you know, when you're coming into an arena.
When you were involved in Michigan when that happened, was it just your reaction, right? John Green, as you said, you're friends with him now, but he throws the Diet Coke, I think it was, and hits you on the scores table. Was that just your visceral reaction at that time that you didn't even really think about it? You just responded, somebody threw something at you, you were going to go, you know, defend yourself?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't about defending. I wasn't going to defend myself because it was nothing to defend. It was only a cup. It wasn't like it was someone in front of me. The bigger issue to me was the disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the biggest issue. That's never happened before, you know, where someone just threw something at me. So I was just like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to let you just throw a cup. That was the ultimate form of disrespect.
Right.
You know, and although it was just a cup, you don't prepare. You don't go into an arena and say, okay, I'm going to get hit with a cup today, and I'm just going to tell that fan that he's a bad boy. Right? You go into the arena ready to play a basketball game, and you're ready to get – you're going into that arena with a killer mindset. They say Jordan got the killer instinct. Well, what does that mean? That means you're going into an arena with a killer instinct to play basketball, right? And that instinct translates to anything – that's happening within those 2 hours, you know, that you're playing basketball. So that was, you know, I was in it. I was in a zone. We was up 20 points against Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in a zone competitively competing. And then when I got hit, you know, I was very, very highly, highly upset.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Talking with Meta World Peace, unfortunately, we're short on time, so I only got about 2 minutes left with you, but I want to ask you about the actual playoffs. Anthony Davis has this injury. We don't know what it means for his future in terms of this playoff series with the Suns. How concerned would you be for the Lakers if Anthony Davis is banged up or if he can't play in Game 5?
It's going to be really interesting. Obviously, it's going to be tough to win without Anthony. You know, it's going to be tough to win without Anthony, and we're just going to have to get through it. These injuries happen. I'm so happy that he won a title. You know, I'm so happy that he won a title. Because imagine if we don't win last year and then we get injured this year. So we got one. He did what he had to do. He came to L.A. and won a title. Some people come to L.A. and they don't win a title. So Anthony's good in my book.
That was Meta World Peace when he joined us yesterday, the man formerly known as Ron Artest, who won a championship with the Lakers 11 years ago. Didn't really answer the Anthony Davis question too much there at the end, but you can now see certainly why I had to ask him about it. Because the Lakers, as we saw last night, are far from the same team without Anthony Davis. Outside of LeBron, there isn't another player on the team that has made an All-Star game in the last 3 years. In fact, there's nobody there that can help LeBron James. And we know that LeBron, like everyone, needs that partner in crime. Every team that's won a championship over the years not only had that star, but they had the sidekick as well. And LeBron does not have one without Anthony Davis. I mean, this is going back to his Cleveland days when he's playing with Ilgauskas and all those other guys. You look at last night's game. Dennis Schroeder was 0 for 9. Caldwell Pope didn't score. Right? Caruso shot 2 of 8. He had 5 points in 21 minutes. Nobody chipped in or contributed or helped last night. And LeBron played poorly as well. Andre Drummond, 7. Morris with 4 points. The entire team played poorly. That game was embarrassing for the Lakers last night. It was embarrassing for LeBron James. I mean, LeBron had 7 points at halftime, and they were down by 30. That game was over in the second quarter. And then he left the court and went to the locker room with 6 minutes left in the game still. Got up from the bench and went to the locker room. Quit on his team, which is embarrassing to me. And I know the comparisons are always LeBron to Michael Jordan. How do they stack up? He's not cut from the same cloth as Michael Jordan. He's not even cut from the same cloth as Kobe Bryant, right? Because those guys never had a stinker like that last night and then walk out on their team in the fourth quarter to go sulk in the locker room. LeBron looked uninterested. And last night was a huge game for him specifically, but obviously for the Lakers as well, because this could be his last good chance to win an NBA title. And he was just talking before the game about how he was going to put the team on his shoulders. And yet that didn't happen. The exact opposite happened. The Lakers lost by 30. And when LeBron was playing last night, they were outscored by 24. When he was on the bench, they were outscored by only 6. They played better without LeBron James last night. But they were outscored, the Lakers were, by 24 points when he was on the floor. He needs somebody like an Anthony Davis, because the Lakers have no other options to help out. And he needs it soon, which of course at this point is only Anthony Davis. What he needs is a healthy Anthony Davis. Yesterday was the largest halftime deficit for the Lakers in their franchise history in 23 years, down by 30 at the half. It was 66-36. I was watching the better game, the Blazers and the Nuggets. I figured I'll switch over to the Lakers when this game's over. They have the score in the corner, and you just see it keep going up and up and up, and the Suns building the lead. And then, you know, you look over at one moment and say, wait a minute, they're down by 30 in the second quarter? This is the first time LeBron has lost back-to-back games in the first round in his career. It's the first time he's down 3-2 in the first round in his career. It soon may be the first time he loses in the first round. Teams that have won Game 5 of a tied series have gone on to win the series 83% of the time. So that tells us, history shows us, that LeBron at this point has a 17% chance of winning the next two and moving on. And without Anthony Davis, without a healthy Anthony Davis, that goes down even further from 17%. The Lakers have even less of an opportunity. So that's what LeBron is up against the next couple of days. Most likely trying to do it without AD, and most likely trying to do it while having to go to Phoenix for a Game 7. And on the flip side, Chris Paul only had to play 23 minutes last night, which is good for two factors. Number one, it shows Phoenix, they still won by 30 while getting 3 buckets in 23 minutes from Chris Paul. And the second part of it is that he only had to play 23 minutes. He's playing banged up, dealing with injuries, looked like he got injured again last night. To save him, to let him rest up, get healthy, don't have to push him too much, he's playing injured, and if he only has to play 23 minutes and you can still win, right, that's crucial. Now you get ready for Game 6 with Chris Paul, who's a little more rested, maybe a little healthier at this point. And this postseason, at this point, may just simply come down to health, because the Lakers aren't going anywhere without Anthony Davis. The Mavericks were up 2-0. Then Luka Doncic tweaked his neck. The Clippers have since evened the series. And if Doncic is not 100%, the Clippers will end up winning the series. Game 5 is tonight. This will decide the series, because again, the team that wins Game 5 in a 2-2 series wins the series 83% of the time. How healthy is Luka Doncic? If he's banged up still, if he's not 100%, the Mavericks will be in trouble tonight, therefore in trouble for the rest of this series as well, after building a 2-0 series lead. And that game is in L.A. tonight. The 76ers should be fine this series, but aren't going anywhere in the East without a healthy Joel Embiid. That's their concern right now. And meanwhile, you have the Brooklyn Nets, the championship favorite, who have remained healthy. Right? Even the Bucks, who the Nets are going to play next round. The Bucks don't have Dante DiVincenzo. Right? They have an injury. We'll see how far the Nuggets get without Jamal Murray. The Celtics weren't going to get past the Brooklyn Nets anyways, but Jaylen Brown was injured, and so too was Kemba Walker. That made it even harder for them to get past Brooklyn. Phoenix looked dead to rights when Chris Paul was injured, and I thought, this is it. They're not going to win another game. and how quickly things can change, because then Chris Paul comes back healthy, Phoenix wins the game, Anthony Davis gets hurt, now he's out, and it's the Lakers who look dead. Originally, Phoenix looked dead to rights. We thought, oh, they're not going to win a game. Then Anthony Davis gets hurt, and you're thinking, oh, now the Lakers aren't going to win a game. They're done. Right, the series shifting on those injuries. And really, it's nothing new in the NBA playoffs. This has happened for years, for decades. Go back at the last couple of seasons. 2014, Dwayne Wade got injured, right, helped decide the championship that year. 2015, it was Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving getting injured in the NBA Finals for the Cavs. Andrew Bogut the following year in 2016 helped the Cavs come back and win that series. Kawhi Leonard in 2017 when he got injured. 2018, Chris Paul got injured while the Rockets were up 3-2 on the Warriors. The Warriors came back, won that series, ended up winning the championship. In 2019, the main reason why the Raptors won the championship that year was because Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant were injured for the Warriors. Last year was the bubble. It was unique. The Heat were also banged up in that finals against the Lakers. But go back to 1989 when Magic Johnson got injured and the Pistons won their first ever NBA championship, beating the Lakers, who also didn't have Byron Scott. He got injured too. 1999, the Knicks wound up in the NBA Finals against the Spurs. But the Knicks had to play without Patrick Ewing, who was injured, and the Knicks lost that series. In 2003, the Mavericks were the number one seed. Dirk Nowitzki got injured, and the Mavericks could not come out of the West. 2009, same story with the Rockets and Yao Ming. 2012, same story with the Bulls and Derrick Rose, the number one seed. Rose got injured in the playoffs. There goes the Bulls' chances, even though they seemed to be the best team in the conference that year. Right, even in the NFL, this past year in the NFL, the Packers were missing one of their starting offensive linemen when they lost to the Buccaneers. Then 2 weeks later in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs were down their two tackles against that same Buccaneers team, and Patrick Mahomes was running for his life. Things usually come down to the health of these teams. Who is the healthiest? And when I gave you my picks at the start of the NBA playoffs, I had the final four teams of the 76ers, the Nets, the Lakers, the Clippers. And I think most people would probably pick those four teams. And when you look at those four, right now three of them will be affected by injuries. The 76ers and Lakers don't stand a chance without Joel Embiid or Anthony Davis. And the Clippers may get there because of an injury. They were on the ropes down 2-0. The Mavericks were up big in Game 3. Luka Doncic hurt his neck. And now the Clippers may take a stranglehold of that series and move on. And meanwhile, the Brooklyn Nets, the favorites, the team I've been saying for months is going to win the NBA title, they're the one that's sitting over there still healthy. And if they can remain healthy, it'll better their chances of winning the NBA championship. What has been the concern with the Brooklyn Nets? They weren't able to get all three guys on the floor at the same time this year because of various injuries or issues. And if that happens in the postseason, it could doom them. But if they have at least two of those guys, and certainly if they have all three able to remain on the floor, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, I mean, the three of them combined to average something like 86 points between the three of them against the Boston Celtics throughout that series. You're not beating Brooklyn if they stay healthy, especially if the other teams cannot. If Embiid is out at Phoenix or in Philadelphia, if Anthony Davis is out in L.A., if somebody gets banged up with the Clippers, right, Kawhi Leonard, he struggles to play back-to-back games and a whole lot of minutes in a series. And if Brooklyn can stay healthy, not only will they be the best team in the league, they'll also be the healthiest. The things that could stop the Brooklyn Nets from winning the finals, number one, health, right, injuries. That's their main opponent this postseason, staying healthy. Number two may be the Milwaukee Bucks, who they play next round. Number three is the 76ers, but that'll be a distant number three if Joel Embiid is not healthy. You know, what made the Sixers so tough this year is that they had a three-headed monster with the way Tobias Harris played, to pair him with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and even factor in Doc Rivers as the head coach. But when you take away Embiid, now you have just two stars, or maybe one and a half stars, and one of those, Ben Simmons, can't even shoot the basketball. He refuses to even try. So now you have one and a half stars, and one of them can't even shoot. Now the Sixers will be doomed without Joel Embiid, much like the Lakers without Anthony Davis, as we saw last night. And over there in the corner, the Brooklyn Nets are like Lovitz and the Wedding Singer, right? They're reaping all the benefits. Everyone else is getting injured, and the Nets, as long as they stay healthy, their path to the finals will only become easier. And by the way, for the Brooklyn Nets, they finished off the Celtics last night. They may have been better off if that series actually went six games, right? They could use the extra reps with one another. That series was never in doubt. The Celtics were never a threat. You could almost use them as scrimmages. Now they go into this Bucks series where they'll certainly be more tested than they were against Boston. But if the Nets can stay healthy, they'll have an easier path to go win an NBA championship. The biggest concern for Brooklyn should be, number one, injuries, keeping these guys healthy. And then number two will be the Bucks, who they play in the next round. The NBA playoffs may just come down to that health. because the other teams that we like so much in this field will be affected one way or another by injuries, whether it's the Lakers, the Sixers, or now maybe even the Clippers being given a second life in the West because of an injury to Luka Doncic. Coming up, Trevor Lawrence spoke about his new teammate, Tim Tebow, and his new head coach, Urban Meyer, in Jacksonville. We'll get to that audio when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Trevor Lawrence with comments on his new head coach and his new teammate, Tim Tebow, in Jacksonville. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Now you're speaking my language with a little Toto here on a Wednesday afternoon. Great song. And I always think of the remake of Chips, or when they turned into a film recently with Dax Shepard. And there's a scene when Ed Begley Jr. is speeding on the highway and he's blasting this song. And they pull him over and they tell him, shut off that Toto. Great song. Hey, Justin, the Gamecocks announced that Brett Carey will be their starter Friday when they face Virginia. We won't be on the air Friday because the Gamecocks baseball game will be instead. They start at noon between South Carolina and Virginia. You can also watch it on ESPN2. And the Gamecocks rolling with the hot hand, Brett Carey, who, since he's been given an opportunity as starter, has been fantastic. And you look at his last three appearances, the three starts to end the year. Right against Mississippi State, Kentucky, Tennessee, all wins. He allowed three earned runs in 23 innings while striking out 24. So they're rolling with the hot hand. And Carey, see how he does against Virginia, the junior right-hander, on Friday. Hey, you ever have a problem around the house you think, I can't fix that? Don't worry, because the Canty Foundation Specialists can. They know how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. Check them out online at CantyCanFixIt.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625. They will repair the crawl space, they'll level the concrete, they'll fix if you have a sidewalk that needs to be repaired, a driveway, a pool deck, they'll do that for you. They also handle commercial foundations, they'll waterproof the basement, they'll install gutters, coat the garage floor. They do it all, the Canty Foundation Specialists. And this time of year, you got to make sure you're protecting your toes. So if you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, driveway, patio, pool deck, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and maybe most importantly, the integrity of your toes. Contact them for your free estimate online at CantyCanFixIt.com or give them a call, 843-484-3625. The Canty Foundation Specialist. You may have a problem around the house, you can't fix it. Don't worry, Canty can. You can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500. Before we get to the Trevor Lawrence sound, first, let's go to the phones and check in with Rob, who's with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
I'm all right. How are you today?
Doing well. What's up?
I hadn't been listening to the show for very long, so I didn't know if you may have covered this or not. LeBron James just quitting on his team with 9.5 minutes to go yesterday. It's not the first time he's just left the court. You know, even when he's not playing, to go back to the locker room when the Lakers are losing pretty sizably. What are your thoughts on that? I kind of know what I'm thinking, but just curious.
Yeah, I touched on it earlier. I think it's disappointing. I think it's embarrassing. I think the performance last night was embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing to get off the bench and pout and go back into the locker room just because you're getting killed. And we compare LeBron James to, say, Michael Jordan, and it's played out to do the comparison. And I'm a Michael Jordan guy, and I understand that LeBron James is great. But I think the biggest difference when you want to compare the two is that LeBron was never cut from the same cloth as Michael Jordan or even a Kobe Bryant when we talk about this killer instinct. And Jordan, sure. He lost to the Pistons by 20 back in the day, early on in his career. But he rarely lost like that, and if he did, you wouldn't see him pouting and storming off the bench, right? He wanted to get out there.
He'd be sitting there soaking it all in and telling all his teammates, I hope you're enjoying this.
Exactly right. You
know, that's the difference. I just – LeBron James, he does nothing for me anymore. You know, I used to be a LeBron fan, and his ego at this point is so huge. It's tough for me to even watch a game with him playing. And it's sad because he's a really talented basketball player, but it's pretty embarrassing. I think that's probably the best word for it. I mean, how can you say that you're a world-class competitor and you can't even sit with your team through the end of the game? I don't know. It's just that's what happens when a professional sports league makes one player bigger than the entire league. There's nothing that they can do. You know, they've just capitulated to the players in the NBA, and it's just you see stuff like this. I don't know. I don't see how it can be good for the sport.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Rob. It's not a good look for LeBron James. And look, I was never a big LeBron guy, but I can always acknowledge how great of a player he is. I mean, one of the greats of all time. Probably the second greatest behind Michael Jordan. But it's not a good look. And not for LeBron, but for anybody. If you listen to the show, you know I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. I remember Randy Moss left the field early. I think it was in Washington, Late season game. They were losing in the fourth quarter. Same idea. He stormed off, went into the locker room. And that was a big deal. In fact, I think it was the final game he played for the Vikings. They traded him that offseason. That was like the straw that broke the camel's back. Right? It's a bad look for any athlete, even if you're losing. You sit there and you take it. Because for LeBron, I mean, he didn't play well last night. He's the star of the team. And if you lose by 30, it falls more on his shoulders than anybody else, even if Dennis Schroeder goes 0-9, all these other guys. And you sit there with your teammates until the game is over, and then you go into the locker room together, and you recoup and try to get better next game. I don't like that. I don't like that from anyone. I don't like that bailing. Right? When people talk about, say, like the transfer portal, people just quitting, athletes, when things are tough or they're not playing and they leave the school. I think it's a similar – for people that complain about that should complain about athletes leaving the bench early just because they're getting blown out, thinking like, oh, I don't want to stay here for this. Let me go back to the locker room where, who knows, you know, you could kick your feet up, you could watch TV, you could change, shower, get out of there early, start your treatment, whatever it is. It's not like he's going back there and yelling at the TV, rooting the team on. Right? He's giving up on the game. He quit. He quit on the team. He quit in the game with 6 minutes left. And maybe it's not a big deal because they were already down 30 and he's the star and he'll come back and play better in game six. But it's a bad look. Last night was embarrassing for the Lakers. This team needs Anthony Davis to win anything. But if you remove Anthony Davis, it shouldn't lead to a 30-point loss. It shouldn't lead to getting trounced like that last night by Phoenix. I imagine LeBron will come back with a better effort and a better performance in Game 6. The Lakers will be at home. The crowd should be into it. I think LeBron, after being embarrassed last night, will come out, you know, with a vengeance. But there's a lot of things that have been done on or off the court that LeBron hasn't done himself any favors with the NBA fans over the past couple of years. And last night was not a good look. Not for him on or off the court. He didn't look interested on the court either. I mean, it looked like the Lakers almost quit. They knew without Anthony Davis, we're not winning this game. He had 7 points at halftime. When Anthony Davis is out like that, as the star, you got to take over. Put the team on your back. And one of the big knocks on LeBron, if you want to compare him to the other greats, Jordan, Kobe, I think the biggest difference is the lack of that killer instinct. I think he's too passive, especially in the playoffs or in the big moments. And sometimes he's all for making the right basketball play, and he's an incredible passer. And sometimes he makes the great plays, but it was almost like last night in the Blazers game with Damian Lillard. Lillard was going off. It was one of the best performances I've seen in the playoffs in years. And then with the game on the line, 10 seconds left, they were down 3. He passed the ball to C.J. McCollum, who stepped out of bounds. And it's like, Lillard, you had the incredible game. You made 2/3 of your threes. You're the star. Game's on the line. We want you taking the shot if you're a Blazers fan. Right, which is the issue with LeBron a lot of times. Like, we want you trying to make the plays instead of setting up a teammate, even if it's the right basketball play. And last night was another example that just not cut from that same cloth. That's the biggest difference to me. Jordan had that killer instinct. LeBron is the one that gets embarrassed by 30 and then storms off. Right, he goes in the locker room to pout. And that's the big difference when you want to compare those two. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I never promised you a rose garden. along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime. When you take, you gotta give. So live and let live, or let go. Oh, 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 I beg your pardon.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping up hour one on a Wednesday afternoon. We'll talk some golf coming up in just a little bit with Jeremy Schilling. You know, we talked about this on the show previously, so as a follow-up, Medina Spirit, who had won the Kentucky Derby, but then we had the concerns, you know, the failed drug test. Medina Spirit ended up failing the second drug test as well. Also tested positive for the for steroid in the second drug test. So they're now asking for they're filing for a third drug test. Like, I mean, come on, what are we going to do? Come on. How many drugs? It's like when you double down with somebody. Double or nothing. Double it, and you keep going until you finally win, getting rid of your, you know, $10,000 debt with your buddy because you've been doubling down the whole time. That's what we're doing here. Oh, he failed the second drug test? Well, how about a third? I bet you he passes that one. And you keep going until he passes a drug test. And then after all the failed drug tests, you say, see, look at this clean drug test. I told you he wasn't cheating. You know, the first one, okay, maybe there was some sort of error. And then you do a second drug test, fails that too. It's like, come on, what are we doing here? So this, it's, you know, Medina Spirit, it's not like he's going for the Triple Crown this weekend anyways. But we'll see what happens with the Kentucky Derby now. If they're going to strip him of that title, if they're going to do the third drug test, if Bob Baffert's going to continue to fight this, if it gets dragged out, who knows? But since we talked about it on the show previously, a follow-up, they just announced it within the last hour that the second drug test also came back positive for Medina Spirit, this year's Kentucky Derby winner. So that's not good for the horse or Bob Baffert. Well, the horse doesn't really know what's going on. But in terms of Medina Spirit's Kentucky Derby win, probably not a good thing. When we come back, we'll talk some golf as we do every Wednesday with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.